You are now listening to the Masters Mehan podcast. Episode 9, Satanic Principle of Human Control Number 4, To Survive at Any Cost. This episode may be deemed inappropriate for some listeners. If you have been ritualistically or scientifically abused, or are a minor, please consult someone safe before continuing. This episode builds on the previous ones. To get the most out of this experience, it is best to start with episode 1 and listen down the series. Or don't. It's okay to walk around blind, dumb, and confused. Just don't complain if you fall in a ditch.
That stuff makes pure mescaline seem like ginger beer, man. Adrenochrome.
Adrenochrome?
There were covens in Europe, that's what they're called, the congregation. They use blood in their rituals, and the blood that has the most power is baby's blood. And they don't just use the blood, they use the flesh, too.
Rosemary!
Can't we just accept this as the new normal?
Hollywood, to me, is sort of a branch of the CIA. I think it's just been laced with intelligence operations. Mind control really runs rampant in Hollywood among the musicians and the acting community. It's just everywhere.
I pledge to be a better ally for the LGBTQ plus community. I and the leadership team are determined to use this moment on how we can take action.
Well, the truth is different these days. It's more of a hunch you're willing to die for.
No, it's not.
If in some small way we have increased awareness, tolerance, and acceptance of gay-themed issues in the media, then we welcome that as a happy byproduct of our work.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
While it may seem nutty at first, the goal of the first three steps is to turn a child into a strong adult. The Luciferians see strength as hardness, the same that Jesus Christ called the heart of stone. Listeners will note that these first four steps attack the pattern of Christianity, which the Lord has said is faith, hope, charity, salvation. These were governmentally ignored in the world when the new faith was invented for the masses. This new ism is called Darwinism. Its main doctrine is called the survival of the fittest, which is exactly the same thing as saying might makes right, and the end justifies the means, or as too many human snakes say, business is just business. Darwinism was used in the United States to stop negotiating with the Native American tribes and begin the process of killing them off. Previously, it was believed that they were maybe the lost tribes of Israel. But if not that, then at least the children of Noah, and thus worthy of Christ's golden rule, his all-reaching second commandment that after one's love of God, one must love one's neighbor. Some years later, Hitler would use the same Darwinistic philosophies on the true Jews, as opposed to the Edomic Jews. This is why he spent so much time and money on genetics. Today we call it DNA mapping. We will have more on this. Go and find an original first edition copy of Hitler's Mein Kampf.
Gesundheit.
And you will see that it is dedicated to Charles Darwin. All ethnic cleansing is based on Darwin's principles, which has caused so much tragedy, and yet we still teach it to our children, claiming it is illegal to teach them Christian principles of human compassion, which our nation was founded upon. Darwinism leads to no charity. It is not possible to please God on his inescapable day of judgment if there is no charity in your heart of stone. See how you've been set up? It's a mythological spell that has been cast on you. Still, human beings can be taken to a place where their God-given desire to live becomes the need to survive, and at any cost. In a very real way, it's like breaking a horse or taming a falcon. In fact, prior to Dr. Mengele's experiments for swine pig Adolf Hitler. The Luciferian methods of breaking children were based more on animal husbandry than science. Today, the approach is a mixture of both. Let's step into the darkness, or as the Luciferians spell cast, understand.
All right. Silence!
The fourth step in the satanic training that is used to teach a child that only the strong survive, and that it's okay to hurt the weak since they are beneath you anyway, all occult members are expected to become aggressive perpetrators. So this training begins as soon as possible, usually between the ages of 2 and 3 years old. Having embraced the first three steps, which are to have no personal needs, to have no personal wants, and to have no personal hopes as reality, their new normal, the child is now taken to a room where another child, their age or younger, is being savagely beaten. This beating will go on for a long time. At some point, the child in training will be told to participate in the beating. If the child refuses, he or she will be savagely beaten along with the younger child, and then commanded again to be the perpetrator. This will continue for hours if necessary, until the trainee complies and beats the other child to protect him or herself. This trauma will be locked into various personas within and can be called up on demand. It is very useful for the occult when murder is needed or military-style uses are sought or the Second Amendment needs to be challenged again, etc. All hatred is to be directed at the weak and those outside of the occult. Again, this principle works on the public. Let's illuminate. The fear caused by the recent disease scare caused many to lose their jobs, means of creature comforts, and basic sense of humanity. In order to survive, they had to embrace the maxims that their otherwise unthinkable actions were survival of the fittest. Everyone said that compliance and the new normal was necessary in order to survive. One could not survive, or even buy or sell, unless one took the mark upon themselves they were threatened. Do you hear it? Are you also seeing how predictive programming works? Please don't make us tune up your programming again with more. But isn't it better to just stay on the
follow the yellow brick road, follow the yellow brick road, follow the yellow brick road.
The ancients taught that humanity has two paths, one toward the angels, called the Ben Elohim, the straight and narrow as pointed out by Jesus Christ, or the other, toward Cain, who was the first beast man, Sasquatch. A little Luciferian might help. Luciferians, fake Christians, and Edomite Sumerians, who pretend to be Jews, teach that the fall of Eden actually happened like this. One day, while Eve was walking naked in the garden, she saw the sexy snake, who reminded her of a super penis.
Just help me a little bit sick, you know the fight can't touch you if the skin is thick.
better charm that snake.
You gotta let it show, ain't gonna let it go. I'm gonna let them know, never gonna let it go. Well, all right, let's get it right.
Overcome by his charm and her lust, they made passionate love. I'm not sure how the snake was able to hold his breath that long, but when they were done and his head was free again, he told Eve that she was going to have to find some way to hide this from her husband Adam, since now she was pregnant. Eve reasoned that if she seduced Adam, she could later just say that the child was his. Clever girl. So they say that since childish Jews and Christians can't handle the truth, this first sexual deception was repainted in Genesis to be the forbidden fruit. Of course, it is a lie, but these mythoses vary a bit. Lucifer is a schizophrenic. Remember that I told you that. So here is the most common version they teach. This first, we might say bastard, born from Eve was half reptilian, half human. Had this first child been a girl, they could have named her Elizabeth. But since she was a boy, she was named Cain. Eve's other children were all with Adam, who was not, they say, as impressively endowed, but marriage has its sacrifices. Now, and this is important, the Food Guide Pyramid says that reptiles eat mammals. Ergo, Cain is able to eat Abel. It's just the natural, beastly, Darwinian way of things. The most dangerous reptiles kill lesser mammals with their poisonous injections.
Ouch!
And sometimes they eat them. Now you know where our word cannibal comes from. It's okay for the sons and daughters of the snake union to eat and misuse the sons and daughters of Adam, who are mammals. Survival of the fittest. It is important that the Luciferian captive mammals understand that they are mammals, as opposed to sons and daughters of God made in his image. So they have been reinforcing it in schools and in song. In this we stand under our betters, who see themselves as elites, but more specifically, the sons and daughters of Cain, the snake father. Understand how warped it is?
Oh, well now, we call this the act of mating, but there are several other very important differences between human beings and animals that you should know about.
Darwin was a moron, one of the useful idiot puppets of his Luciferian masters. We have so programmed our children today that they see Darwinian concepts even where they don't exist. Science is just starting to discover that most of nature does not believe in the survival of the fittest. We are just beginning to understand that much of nature actually functions on principles of self-sacrifice and mutual aid. Almost no American student has studied the competing theories of Russian scientist Pyotr Kropotkin. Luciferians hate Russians. In Russia, Pyotr Kropotkin eloquently defeated Darwin's moronic theories with clear-cut logic and scientific observation. It does make you wonder how our theories of inhumane genocide, particularly when connected to Luciferian forced imperial colonization and gentrification, would have evolved if instead of an awkward inbred English brat going to the Galapagos Islands, where reptiles do eat each other in isolation, we had been influenced by a Russian studying more intellectual animals and mammals in the tundra of Siberia. It is common in the occult for children to be drugged and then hypnotized to believe that they were taken through a wormhole back or forward in time to witness important events and participate in them. One particular favorite is the assassination of Julius Caesar. Future events, such as shooting up a public venue, can be staged so that the actual event appears more dreamlike or as a foregone conclusion. Sometimes these reenactments take place when a theme park or sound stage is closed for the night.
Oh boy!
So, in that tradition, let us go back in time and hear Dr. Kropotkin for ourselves.
Who are the fittest? Those who are continually at war with each other, or those who support one another? I saw among the semi-wild cattle and horses in Russia, among the wild mammals everywhere, the squirrels and so on, that when animals have to struggle against scarcity of food, the entire population of their species comes out of the ordeal so impoverished that progressive evolution of their species cannot be based upon Darwinian concepts of competition. In all these scenes of animal life which passed before my eyes, I saw mutual aid and mutual support carried to such extent that I saw with my own eyes that it was the true answer for their survival.
Kropotkin then illustrated so many examples of mutual aid within the animal world and cross species. Among them, he observed beetles, crabs, termites, ants, and bees. In the mammal world, Kropotkin goes on to describe the cooperation that exists between deer, gazelles, buffaloes, antelopes, wild goats, sheep, squirrels, wolves, dogs, hares, rats, rabbits, horses, donkeys, wild boar, hippopotami, rhinoceri, seals, walruses, and sorry, Charles, monkeys. It is the example that came from the harsh Russian tundra which contrasts sharply with Darwin's observation from his isolated island. Let's take his comments on the steppe eagle as our example. We will truncate them here for time.
The steppe eagle is a scientifically observable example of mutual aid as opposed to Darwinian survival of the fittest. One can easily observe this eagle rising high in the air for half an hour, making wide circles in silence. When at once its piercing voice is heard, its cry is soon answered by another eagle, which will approach it, followed by a third, a fourth, and so on, till 9 or 10 eagles come together and soon descend together. If one will go to the ground, Beyond where he saw the eagles flying, he will discover that they have gathered around the corpse of an animal. The old birds, which as a rule, begin the meal first, such are their rules of propriety, will when finished sit upon the haystacks of the neighborhood and keep watch to protect the younger ones from any intruder, while the younger ones finish their meal, surrounded by bands of waiting crows who get the last meal.
In other words, they take turns watching out for each other. From this, Kropotkin intelligently reasoned that these eagles hunt together. When they are all high up in the sky, they each take a separate airspace. 10 eagles hunting together can scan an area of 25 miles square. The moment anyone discovers something, they call to the others, who celebrate the meal as a team. This is not survival of the fittest, not by any made-up definition of the same. Taking turns eating and giving due deference to their elder birds flies in the exact opposite direction of Darwin's conclusions. His observations prove that competition, survival of the fittest as a mark of evolution, weakened rather than strengthened individual species. He said,
"To admit a pitiless inner war for life within each species, and to see that war the condition of Darwinian progress, was to admit something which is not proven, and also lacks confirmation from direct scientific observation. Happily, competition for survival is not the rule, either in the animal world or among mankind. We can see that it is limited among animals to exceptional periods. Better conditions are created by the elimination of competition through mutual aid and mutual support. In the great struggle for life, the greatest possible fullness and intensity of life with the least waste of energy, true natural selection continually seeks out ways precisely for avoiding competition as much as possible. We observe that ants combine in nests and into nations. They pile up their stores, they join together their food gathering, and thus avoid competition. We can see that so-called natural selection picks out the ant family, which knows best how to avoid competing with each other. Many birds in Siberia slowly move southwards as the winter comes and gather in numberless societies, undertake long journeys together to avoid competition. Many rodents fall asleep when the time comes that competition would set in, while other rodents store food for the winter and gather in large villages for obtaining the necessary protection when at work. The reindeer, when the lichens are dry in the interior of the continent, migrate towards the sea together. Buffaloes cross an immense continent in order to find plenty of food in herds for support. And the beavers, when they grow numerous on a river, divide into two parties, and the old ones down the river, while the young ones up the river, to avoid competition between them. This is observable time and time again in nature."
But how does it translate to humanity? He went on,
"It is evident that life in human societies would be utterly impossible without a corresponding development of social feelings, and especially of a certain collective sense of justice growing to become a habit. If every individual were constantly abusing his personal advantages without the others interfering in favor of the wronged, no human society would be possible. Love, sympathy, and self-sacrifice play an immense part of the progressive development of our human feelings. It is the recognition of mutual aid, of the close dependency of everyone's happiness, upon the happiness of all and of the sense of justice or equity, which brings the individual to consider the rights of every other individual as equal to his own. Upon this broad and necessary foundation, the still higher moral feelings of man are developed, and feelings of justice develop, more or less, with all gregarious animals. For example, whatever the distance from which the swallows or the cranes come, each one returns to the nest it had built and repaired the previous year. If a lazy sparrow intends appropriating the nest which a comrade is building, or even steals from it a few sprays of straw, the larger group will intervene against their lazy comrade. And it is evident that without such interference, being no rule, no nesting associations of birds could exist. Separate groups of penguins have separate resting places and separate fishing abodes, which the whole helps maintain.
Back to the present. Only recently have scientists discovered that plants behave in the same way. Using what they are dubbing the wood wide web, plants share information with other plants through touching roots. If one plant senses danger or is in fact dying, it will warn the others to prepare and have been observed sending its nutrients to another in order to save it. This is not survival of the fittest, but is literally self-sacrifice. The closest concept that exists anywhere to this type of thing is Christianity, where we have been taught that the good shepherd gives his life for the sheep, and I am the true vine, and ye are the branches. How did Christ know these profound things? By contrast, might equals right, and the need to survive at another's expense can be seen in many Luciferian concepts. In the United States, the thought police, in terms of the human will to survive, was witnessed by Dr. Peter Bregan when he was still a young college student. Commenting on his observations in regard to our recent pandemic and alien spike proteins in our bodies, he said, let's let him speak for himself.
Nearly all the globalists, whether it's Bill Gates or whether it's even Fauci has talked this way in so-called scientific articles, or Klaus Schwab, or Xi Jinping from China, they all want to control population. It is one of their dominant ideas. Bill Gates happily has a whole section on his website of the Gates Foundation about population control. It's not something we have to conjure up from his little smiles that he gives when he thinks about having fewer human beings. It's almost a unanimous view among global predators. We have too many human beings, too many to control, too many useless eaters, too many problem people. That's a very, very important part. So we have infertility and we have actually culling. But there's another aspect of brain damage now when you get into the brain, and that is conformity and docility. So when they finally got around to doing detailed studies of lobotomy, one of the ways that they put it, and these were the people who favored lobotomy, they said the person in a controlled, confined situation does reasonably well. That is, they're manageable, they don't get out of control, they can be led about, they line up and get their dinners. They do not get very, they'll get irritable, but they don't have the energy to do a criminal act or the energy or planning to really get into serious trouble. Walter Friedman bragged about that. He said, you know, these stories of bank robbers by lobotomized people, why they don't have the ability to plan or the energy or the concern. Very proudly about what they're doing to human beings. Now, what is better for totalitarian mass than producing docility, lack of being able to plan anything, that like a rebellion? So to the extent that they anticipated a brain damage, a generalized brain damage reaction, docility is, that's such a big part of it. One of the reasons perhaps that I'm not exactly like most scientists and physicians is that I got introduced to this whole area as a college freshman at Harvard. For 4 years, I had the keys to the hospital and led the program. And one of the things I noticed immediately was I got to see a lot of lobotomized patients. It was 1954 to 58 that I was in college. And I got to see shock treatment and insulin coma treatment. And what I noticed was very, very apparent. And that is that when the person would be led in, say, to the insulin coma, which is simply giving you an injection of insulin sufficient to deprive your brain of enough sugar to kill you, one of the basic things that I could see was that people came in as human beings. They were angry, most of them, upset. They didn't want to be in this place. They would certainly be irritable. They'd be difficult to handle. And then they'd get knocked out by the insulin. They'd go into seizures. They were literally dying. And then they'd be given sugar, water, or orange juice with extra sugar, and they'd come out of it. And now they were not just docile. They were grateful for having their lives saved. They were completely helpless, docile people. And that was the goal. So I knew from the beginning that all the other things they were saying about biochemical imbalances or improving their mental health was all nonsense. This was a total institution, very similar to an extermination camp. They were just having their way with these people, making them more amenable. And then the same story when the psych drugs came in, the big antipsychotic drugs, which came in the 50s. I got to see some of their effects. One dose produced somebody similar to somebody who'd been abused in a concentration camp. One dose made people docile.
Dr. Bragan is famous in being the doctor who ended lobotomies in the United States as a practice for controlling difficult people, such as Rosemary Kennedy, who was lobotomized on order of her father, Joseph Kennedy, without the knowledge or consent of his wife or greater family. She remained hidden away until her death in 2005. Dr. Bragan became concerned when he noticed that synthetic DNA, when injected into the human body, can pass the blood-brain barrier and scar up a human being's frontal lobe in the exact same way that a person was lobotomized after Nazi scientists were allowed to continue their experiments in the United States after World War II. Now listen to Bill Gates explaining Operation Funvax to the CIA on April 13, 2005, complete with a Microsoft PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, so the name of this project is Funvax, which is the vaccine for religious fundamentalism. We have individuals who are religious fundamentalists, religious fanatics. And this is the expression, RT-PCR, the VMAT2 gene. By vaccinating them against this, we'll eliminate this behavior, part of the brain that has to do with intents and beliefs and desires. In marked contrast, here's an individual who would not particularly self-describe as religious. And when they're read a religious text, what you see is that this part of the brain called the anterior insula lights up. This is a part of the brain that's associated with disgust or displeasure on hearing something.
So you're suggesting I take a CT scan with me when I'm evaluating people to determine whether I put a bullet in their head?
The virus would immunize against this VMAT2 gene, and that would have the effect that you see here, which is it's essentially to turn a fanatic into a normal person.
How would you suggest that this is going to be dispersed, the aerosol?
Well, so the present plan and the tests that we've done so far have used respiratory viruses, such as flu or rhinoviruses, and we believe that that's a satisfactory way to get the exposure of the largest part of the population, most of the
proposal.
If you find all of this shocking, do an internet search for a young Bill Gates and his rabbi, Rabbi Schneerson, the head of the fundamentalist Jewish extremist end times cult Chabad Lubavitch. Is Bill's desire to funvax the world born of fundamentalism? Here he is again.
This is urgent, and it's going to require incredible collaboration. It's going to have to go to 7 billion people.
World domination. Adolf Hitler would be proud.
Kiss him tight.
Luciferians have no tolerance for anyone who disagrees with them because they, like reptiles, follow their snake father and will consume even their own. It's all about survival with them and the food guide pyramid. It's okay for them to eat and misuse you. You are the sheeple. You are the herd that must be managed. Remember when some of our celebrities, the new demigods among us, celebrated the comedic decapitation of one sitting president while ignoring the moronic ramblings and warmongering of another one? Remember when we were asked not to make fun of one president's ugly daughter, but are free to mock another president's awkward son? Use these things to help you see who our true captors are. True tolerance is tolerating things that you dislike. You can't, by definition, be called a tolerant, open-minded person if you only tolerate what you like. Wasn't the entire fear and push for experimental injections all about some of us surviving at any cost? Can you see it? Can you see the setup? It is not ultimately man's right to judge the worth of another human soul. God Almighty has said that on the day of judgment, he will not look upon sin with the least degree of allowance. In other words, God does not tolerate sin, but allows it to continue while mankind is under probation. Humanity would be wise to read his unadulterated word and law now in order to know what the real God in heaven considers sin. While there is still time to repent. Back through the water curtain. The terrible irony is that these divisions have been set up by the occult so that when we are at last exhausted by it all, they believe that we will reach out to them for peace. There is no such thing as a Luciferian peace. Because, wait for it, Lucifer is schizophrenic. This is so important for you to understand. And so, if we are stupid enough to embrace his form of one-world Zion communism, we will just discover what the ancient Assyrians, Babylonians, Medo-Persians, Greeks, Romans, and everyone else who's tried it, has discovered when they tried to bring the world under one thumb with one king, Lucifer. It will never work with a schizophrenic. The human soul desires more than just survival, and God is the author and finisher of our creation. He has placed a desire for freedom and individualism into our DNA. We also enjoy brotherhood, sisterhood, mutual support, and helping one another. In Christ-like terms, this is called charity. The occult knows this, and it scares them, because if we wake up, we will have more on this. Rationale for fair use of copyrighted items used. Fair use law allows fair use when copyrighted material is being used to make a specific educational, research-based, scholarly, and/or critical comment on the work being used. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Masters Mayhem will return